This is the Medical Beat on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right. Hey, good morning. Good morning, St. Louis and surrounding areas. You're listening to the Medical Beat 97.1, and it's a beautiful day outside if you like rain and cold. We're going to be talking about the topic that's on everybody's mind, and I don't even have to tell you what that topic is, but we're going to talk about the COVID-19 pandemic, especially as it pertains to us right here at home in the St. Louis metro area. And specifically, we're going to talk about how the pandemic is going for us in St. Louis, what the projections are for the future, and a million other things. And we have with us here a very special guest. We have the county executive, Dr. Sam Page. Say hi, Dr. Page.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Hey, we are really, really thrilled that you could be here on the show with us. So for those of you who don't know, Dr. Page is an anesthesiologist who was on the county council. And then relatively recently, the previous county executive in St. Louis had to step aside. Long backstory to that one. And now Dr. Sam Page is county executive and became county executive soon before the county faced a major medical crisis, specifically the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're going to be asking Dr. Page all about the pandemic as it pertains to the county. And we're also going to be asking about the county government and what the county government is trying to do to help out. So let me start out, Dr. Page, by asking you a kind of a multi-part question. I hope you had plenty of coffee because this first question is going to have many parts here. So, yeah.
Sure, that's fine.
Okay, good. Yeah. So I guess the first thing I wanted to know is, can you tell our listeners sort of the big picture, kind of a big picture summary of how the pandemic is going in St. Louis? And also, what is the trajectory? How is the trajectory of the pandemic going? Have we reached the peak or not? And also, part number three is, can you give us a summary of some of the things that the county government is doing to try to mitigate the crisis?
Well, there's a lot there, so I will march through it and try. Yeah. And if I get a little bit off, please bring me right back.
Sure so, thing. I was serious when I mentioned the coffee.
So, yeah. You know, We've been at this now for a couple of months. Even before we had our first positive case in St. Louis County, we were planning for this because we saw what was happening across the country, and we knew that we would face a challenge at some point. So we had our emergency operations center up and running, and our public health officials were starting to plan and prepare. And here in St. Louis County, almost a month ago, more than a month ago, we started instituting social distancing measures and eventually a stay-at-home order, which has protected us a great deal. If we look at what's happened across the country, on the coasts, and across the world, we were fortunate to gain the faith and confidence of our community to follow us on our social distancing, and we have not had the impact of other communities. Our hospitals are working well together. They were well prepared. They coordinated their activities earlier. And Dr. Garza has done a good job representing and reporting on how the health systems have responded to this, the number of hospitalizations, the ICU admissions, and the ventilators. On the public health side, we're working cooperatively with other public health departments in neighboring jurisdictions, St. Charles County, Franklin County, Jefferson County, and the city of St. Louis. We've organized our public health response together and have started trying to coordinate testing throughout the county. Testing is a big part of what we do to respond to a public health emergency in the 21st century. And, you know, in the 14th century, the response was just quarantines of large populations and time and patients. And unfortunately, in our country, we're qu- quite a bit behind on the production of testing materials. And here in St. Louis County, we're struggling like everyone to compete for the ability to purchase those materials. The testing has been up and running here for several weeks in all corners of the county, and that's starting to become more and more prevalent, but not anywhere where we need to be. So we're moving forward in a really organized way and touching this as quickly as possible.
Yeah. So I guess I was especially wondering about the testing situation. So it sounds like the testing situation is we still have a pretty big shortage of tests, but that problem is getting less bad. The shortage is not as bad as it used to be. How's that? What's up with that?
Well, we are facing this national shortage, and early on in our country, we made some decisions that didn't prepare us quite as well on the production side. But we're competing. We're able to get tests through the State Department of Health. We're able to order a few tests. The backbone of the testing infrastructure in St. Louis County is run by the health systems through their regional operations. Layered on top of that are the public health response. Some tests that we're able to get, we're standing up testing in our public health centers more aggressively starting on Monday. We've had a few tests, mainly for our rapid response team that goes into nursing homes to test residents there and their employees whenever there's an outbreak and first responders. But we're starting to be able to get enough tests now to get out into the community more. And then our federally qualified health centers also have a footprint in testing. And then there's the private labs. But we still don't have enough tests in our region to test everyone who's symptomatic. And they really have been limited for the most part to people with chronic health conditions who are symptomatic, who are likely to do poorly with a COVID-19 infection, and then healthcare workers, hospitalized patients, and first responders.
So people in those categories are prioritized for the tests, and if you're not in those categories, then currently they're just someone can be sick with COVID and never really get diagnosed.
Well, we can make a clinical diagnosis based on their symptoms, and anyone who has a dry cough or shortness of breath and a fever in this setting is presumed to have COVID-19 and would be treated like that until we can get a test for them. We hope over the next week to be able to greatly expand testing to everyone who's symptomatic, and that's a big part of our plan to move out of the stay-at-home orders.
Yeah. Oh, so that's good news. So it might be as soon as a week from now when the testing situation is better?
Yes, we're hoping next week. Again, we've got a lot of people working on this, and we're lucky that we have major healthcare institutions here in St. Louis that are very sophisticated. BJC and Mercy and SSM all are first class. They each have a testing ability within their systems, and those have been gearing up. They've always had the ability to run tests, but purchasing the supplies has been very difficult.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's good to know. Oh, time flies so fast. That music means Chad needs to take us out here. We're going to be back soon. And when we get back, I'm going to ask Dr. Page about the peak. Are we there yet? Are we at the peak? And what happens after that? Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Steve Harvey. This is the Medical Beat, and we'll be right back.
The Cathedral Basilica. Golden.
You're listening to the Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, so like the voice said, you're listening to the Medical Beat. This is 97.1 FM Talk. KFTK. I am your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. And for those of you who missed it, we have on the show today the county executive, Dr. Sam Page, who's telling us about the COVID epidemic here in the St. Louis metropolitan area and is talking about the county's response to that pandemic. And I think that the first thing I want to ask is, can you tell me, so Sam, can you tell me, or can you tell all of us, the peak of the pandemic. I I think I read something a couple of days ago that the peak is coming really soon. So basically, are we there yet? Are we there?
Well, thanks, Steve. Yeah, the peak is really a plateau. It's like any curve. You can't really see the curve until you're past it and looking back, and it's established. But over the past couple of days, we've seen it flatten out a bit. Dr. Garza does a great job of keeping track of those hospitalization numbers, and that's really what we watch. In any environment where testing is inadequate, and we know that it's inadequate in our country, and there aren't enough testing supplies, and there aren't enough in our region either, but we can't really depend on the number of tests to determine where the peak is, because we just don't have enough supplies. Oh. So we watch the number of people who are sick in the hospital, and then that curve seems to be flattening out, and we expect it to do that this weekend.
Gotcha. I see what you mean. So when they talk about the peak flattening out, it's really measuring people in the hospital, people in the ICU, people in on ventilators. It's not the number of people who tested positive, because that number could go up just because we have more testing. Yeah.
And that number is a little bit unreliable, because sometimes it's reported in batches. There are four or five different groups in the testing space, and their results come. Some come in a few hours, 24 hours. Some take a few days. So they come in bundles, and that number as a trend monitor is not as accurate as we would hope. If we had a very robust testing environment, we could watch that more closely.
Yeah, okay. So it's kind of unclear if we're at the peak yet, but it sounds like we're either at the peak or close to it, probably. Would that be fair to say?
We wouldn't judge the peak of the virus in our community by test results. We would watch that as a trend line, as a number, and as a secondary variable, but really a better predictor of where we are is hospitalizations and ICU admissions. And those seem to be flattening out this week. And I would expect, just from what I've seen in Dr. Garza's reports, that we're at the top of that plateau, and we should start trending down a little bit next week.
Oh, that's good news. That's good news. Yeah. And I just from what I see on the news, it sounds like, at least to me, it sounds like things are going quite a bit better in St. Louis County than they are in a lot of comparably sized cities, like Detroit and places like that. So it sounds like things are going less bad than I expected them to go when I was looking at the numbers in other parts of the country. Yeah, so things are relatively better than expected.
Here. Well, we certainly plan for the worst and hope for the best. We were lucky to move very quickly and assertively early on, and that's really protected St. Louis County and their region pretty well in what really is a devastating virus and a devastating impact on our community.
Oh, and the economy, yeah. And I know, as far as the hospitals, I know that Dr. Garza is leading the St. Louis Metropolitan Pandemic Task Force, and I know Dr. Garza, he's sort of a rock star. Didn't he used to be like Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security or something like that?
Medical Director for Homeland Security. He really is he's a good guy. I've known him for many years. Very good at what he does. An ER doctor by training. Very sincere. Has certainly some military training as well. He's a colonel in the Army National Guard and a medical doctor who served overseas and been deployed and worked in Homeland Security. Very uniquely talented person to be at the top leadership of a healthcare system here in St. Louis and helping us through this process.
That's excellent. And so you two know each other from way back, and so you're able to communicate and coordinate together, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. Well, we probably talk three times a week, but he really is doing a great job. I'm very proud of the work he's doing with the health systems, and he's been a good partner in this.
That's great. Are the hospitals doing okay? Are they close to being overwhelmed, or are they hanging in there?
Well, they've done well. They planned ahead, but really what's helped our hospital systems is our early measures to implement crowd control, social distancing, and we were able to stop the rapid spread of this virus in our community to the point where the hospitals could manage the crisis. They also made a lot of changes to prepare for the surge of patients, They stopped elective surgeries. They made some changes in their footprints. We even contracted with a hotel and another facility for overflow in case our hospitals got too busy, so some of the non-intensive care patients could be managed elsewhere. But we had a really good plan. Dr. Garza led that effort for the region, and that plan and that planning and that cooperation between our health systems, along with the social distancing measures that controlled the surge of patients, has really led us to be in a lot better position than other communities.
Yeah, that's great. I guess sometimes planning ahead is a beautiful thing, and I guess sometimes it's sort of invisible, because if you do a really good job of planning ahead, then things go smoothly and they don't really notice all the things people did to plan ahead. But it's good. It's great that things are planned ahead like that. That's good.
Well, yeah. we know what could have happened. You know, we can look across the country and see where we could have been for sure.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And I think the other part of this, you know, one part of this is worrying about the pandemic and people getting sick and dying. The other part of this, of course, is the terrible effects on the economy from having to enforce social distancing and so forth. And I was wondering, is it too soon to be asking this, or what do you think as far as the criteria for being able to open things up in the county?
Well, we started asking those questions as soon as we started to have to close things down, because we knew it would be a tough time. We really have three crises in front of us. We have the public health crisis, the humanitarian crisis, and the economic crisis, and we're working on all three of those. But in order to relax social distancing, we need to see the virus start to come down in our community. We need to see the hospital capacities adequate. Can they handle a new group of patients? Because we know when we relax social distancing, the infections will bump up a bit. And depending on how we relax those and the social distancing measures that are still in place, and we need to know that the hospitals have enough protective equipment and supplies. Most importantly, we need widespread acceptance of social distancing as a new way of life, and robust testing in our community so we can test people who have symptoms, who are acutely ill, and active contact tracing through our health systems and our public health departments to make sure that we can find people who have been exposed, give them advice, quarantine them if necessary, and try and limit the rapid spread of this virus in our community.
Yeah, and that contact tracing is interesting. So they interview someone who's sick, and they say, you know, who have you seen? Who have you been around? And then they go make phone calls? Or how does that work? How does the contact tracing work?
Well, we have volunteers, well over 100 volunteers in St. Louis County now that involved in that. We're working in a coordinated way with surrounding jurisdictions. But whenever someone tests positive, they're interviewed by a public health employee, and we ask them who they've been exposed to, backing up to the time that they could have spread this virus. And then we call those other individuals and then let them know you've been exposed to someone who has tested positive for COVID-19, and these are the precautions you should take. These are the symptoms you should watch for. Call us if you have any symptoms, see your doctor, and just alert people. And it's the same fundamentals of public health for any communicable disease, whether it's tuberculosis or anything else we've been dealing with for decades, and it's applied to this epidemic with COVID-19.
Yeah, and I guess catching those things early is a wonderful thing, because if you don't catch them early, because exponential growth is a thing. You know, if one person gets loose, they can give it to a few others, and they give it to a few others. But catching someone early, you could prevent many, many cases. Yeah.
Yeah, so we see the rapid logarithmic growth of infections in a community as it doubles every 2 or 3 days. And that is what we can't deal with, and we don't like to see. When one infected patient gives this to 2 or 3 or 4 other patients, that is a rate of spread that we can't control. In order to eliminate this virus in our community, each person who's infected has to give it to less than one person. And that's where we are right now with these aggressive social distancing measures. We know that this virus is spreading less than one person from each infected person, and that's where we need to be.
Excellent. So the number of people currently sick from COVID-19 will be starting to decline soon, and hopefully that's one step toward things going back to normal. The sooner the better.
These social distancing measures are certainly very painful. They've rewarded us, but now we have to find our path forward.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, hey, I hear the music playing, so Chad needs to take us off the air for a commercial break. Hey, when I come back, we're going to ask Sam Page some more things. One thing I'm going to ask is, so going from medicine to politics, what the heck were you thinking, Sam? That's what I'm going to ask when we come back, and off we go on break.
Yes, I've been to the gypsy to get my fortune told.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. And we're here talking about COVID-19 in St. Louis County. And our guest is Dr. Sam Page, who is a physician and also county executive for St. Louis County. So I think that the thing I wanted to start out with is, you know, even though this is a medical show, we occasionally kind of start talking about politics, you know, against my better instincts. And usually the conclusion we reach is, you know, politics bad, medicine good. Yay, science, boo, politics. You know, that's kind of the vibe the show is giving off sometimes. But now we have Dr. Page here, who is both. Dr. Page is executive of the county and also a physician, an anesthesiologist. So the first thing I wanted to ask is Sam, what the heck were you thinking? How did you get from medicine to politics? How did that happen?
Well, for the past 20-some years as a practicing physician, I've been involved and engaged and for about 20 years in some sort of local elected part-time position, public service position, while practicing medicine, either city council or state representative or county council. But I started out in medical school just advocating for public health issues. You know, smoking cessation, physician-patient relationship issues. And over time, you learn that you can go talk to an elected official about what you think is important, but if you really want to change the decisions government is making, then you need to have a seat at the table. And that's when I started running for office.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's sort of like politics has kind of become an extension of your mission as a physician, really.
In the operating room, we can take care of a patient, you know, one at a time. In my pain management practice, I could take care of a patient one at a time. But in an elected position, the decisions we make affect large groups of people, and you can help large groups of people instead of just one person at a time. And some of these public health issues, whether it was a prescription drug monitoring program that I passed in the county, or the Tobacco 21 bill and vaping restrictions, those have had a real impact.
They have, yeah, and I can attest to that in my medical practice or in my office. The prescription drug monitoring program is huge. You know, that was just a huge help to a lot of patients. Yeah. So I guess now that you're county executive, I mean, of course, being county executive is a full-time job and more probably. Because here you are on a Saturday morning, right? So it's more than a full-time job. And so you're not, I assume you're not doing anesthesia currently?
Oh, no, this is a full-time job, even outside of a global pandemic and the toughest challenge that our community's faced in really almost 100 years. This is certainly a full-time job. I don't practice anesthesia anymore. I do go 1 week in the month or so just to keep my skills up, and went on a mission trip in the Dominican Republic earlier this year.
But this is
full time with a county of a million people and an almost $1 billion budget. It's a very busy responsibility, and certainly has been interesting to be here with a medical degree to be able to navigate our way through this very challenging time.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. So I'm wondering if you're having a really rough day in your county executive job, do you ever wish you were a doctor again?
Well, one of my colleagues in county government said one time that it frightened him a little bit how calm I was in a crisis.
And
you have to remind them, you know, this is not CPR. We're not there. You know, this moment is not a life-threatening issue, although people are upset and alarmed around us, and they're very high-stakes decisions that we make in county government. And in this setting, of course, it is life-threatening for the community. But, you know, for the past 20 years in the operating room, we deal with very sick patients, and we're bringing them back from a catastrophic event. And that sort of intensity and pressure and high-stakes sort of environment is good training for politics, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. When every day at work is a long string of crises, then other crises are like, it's a lot easier to navigate your way through that, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I'd still like to go on a mission trip a couple of times a year and still, you know, keep my hand exposed to medicine, because I do enjoy taking care of patients, and it is challenging. This position I'm in right now has a lot of responsibility, and it's an opportunity to help steer our community through a very difficult time, and I'm honored to have that chance.
Yeah. And how about one other thing I was wondering about is I know one thing if you can piece together for us, I know there's, you know, you in with the county government, and there's also the governor, and what if you want to do one thing and the governor wants to do something else? Who has authority over that, or who sets the limits, or can the governor override you, or how does that work?
Well, traditionally, these responses are managed at the state level, but occasionally we've seen across the country, more than a few places, where local governments that have been more directly impacted have moved more quickly than the rest of the state, and that's what we did here in St. Louis County. We were impacted. We still are the largest jurisdiction in the state, almost 1 million people, and we certainly have a different demographic, different geography than the rest of the state. We have well over a third, almost half of all of the coronavirus cases in the state, and we certainly had a different situation, and we had to move quickly, and we've benefited from that quick movement. But the governor's orders will impact the entire state. He's made it very clear that he'll leave it to local jurisdictions who are impacted directly to make their own decisions. And when his stay-at-home order is relaxed in a week or so, we anticipate that we'll be continuing here in St. Louis County for a little longer until we believe it's safe to ease those safety orders and, you know, manage the virus and also begin to try and open up our economy more than it has been.
Yeah, and to try to rebuild from there. Yeah. And I guess a lot of the efforts from the county are on the county website. Let me give a quick shout out for that. It's stlcorona.com. So that's STL, and it's spelled the same way as the beer or the virus, stlcorona.com. And there's a ton of good. I looked at that website. You guys have a ton of good information on there.
Well, yes. Yeah, so this is where we can learn about testing, frequently asked questions. All of my executive orders and limitations are there, our public health orders. And also we can track our spending. There's a very nice portal there where in real time you can see what we spent on our three buckets of response, the public health response, the humanitarian response, and the economic response. I've also issued an executive order for an economic rescue team, and we're going to be talking more about that as we have conversations about easing our safety orders and social distancing, positioning the county very aggressively to put our businesses back to where they were before.
Yeah. Oh, an economic rescue team. That's excellent. So yeah. And I guess the web. One thing you mentioned is the website has a detailed listing of the expenditures from the county. So the county has a lot of has good transparency. Everybody can see where the money's being spent.
Yeah, I think that's important, and that's in real time. We want to make sure that everybody understands where the tax dollars are going and how we're spending the federal stimulus grant.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey, and we're here talking about COVID-19 in St. Louis County. And our guest is Dr. Sam Page, who is a physician and also county executive for St. Louis County. So I think that the thing I wanted to start out with is, you know, even though this is a medical show, we occasionally kind of start talking about politics, you know, against my better instincts. And usually the conclusion we reach is, you know, politics bad, medicine good. Yay, science, boo, politics. You know, that's kind of the vibe the show is giving off sometimes. But now we have Dr. Page here, who is both. Dr. Page is executive of the county and also a physician, an anesthesiologist. So the first thing I wanted to ask is Sam, what the heck were you thinking? How did you get from medicine to politics? How did that happen?
Well, for the past 20-some years as a practicing physician, I've been involved and engaged, and for about 20 years in some sort of local elected part-time position, public service position, while practicing medicine, either city council or state representative or county council. But I started out in medical school just advocating for public health issues, you know, smoking cessation, physician-patient relationship issues. And over time, you learn that you can go talk to an elected official about what you think is important, but if you really want to change the decisions government is making, then you need to have a seat at the table. And that's when I started running for office.
Oh, yeah. So it's sort of like politics has kind of become an extension of your mission as a physician, really.
In the operating room, we can take care of a patient, you know, one at a time. In my pain management practice, I could take care of a patient one at a time. But in an elected position, the decisions we make affect large groups of people, and you can help large groups of people instead of just one person at a time. And some of these public health issues, whether it was a prescription drug monitoring program that I passed in the county, or the Tobacco 21 bill and vaping restrictions, those have had a real impact.
They have, yeah. And I can attest to that in my medical practice or in my office. The prescription drug monitoring program is huge. You know, that was just a huge help to a lot of patients. Yeah. So I guess now that you're county executive, I mean, of course, being county executive is a full-time job and more probably. Because here you are on a Saturday morning, right? So it's more than a full-time job. And so you're not, I assume you're not doing anesthesia currently?
Oh, no, this is a full-time job, even outside of a global pandemic and the toughest challenge that our community's faced in really almost 100 years. This is certainly a full-time job. I don't practice anesthesia anymore. I do go 1 week in the month or so just to keep my skills up, and went on a mission trip in the Dominican Republic earlier this year.
But this is
full time with a county of a million people and an almost $1 billion budget. It's a very busy responsibility, and certainly has been interesting to be here with a medical degree to be able to navigate our way through this very challenging time.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. So I'm wondering if you're having a really rough day in your county executive job, do you ever wish you were a doctor again?
Well, one of my colleagues in county government said one time that it frightened him a little bit how calm I was in a crisis.
And
you have to remind him, you know, this is not CPR. We're not, you know, this moment is not a life-threatening issue, although people are upset and alarmed around us, and they're very high-stakes decisions that we make in county government. And in this setting, of course, it is life-threatening for the community. But, you know, for the past 20 years in the operating room, we deal with very sick patients, and we're bringing them back from a catastrophic event. And that sort of intensity and pressure and high stakes sort of environment is good training for politics, for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. When every day at work is a long string of crises, then other crises are like, yeah, it's a lot easier to navigate your way through that, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'd still like to go on a mission trip a couple of times a year and still, you know, keep my hand exposed to medicine, because I do enjoy taking care of patients, and it is challenging. This position I'm in right now has a lot of responsibility, and it's an opportunity to help steer our community through a very difficult time, and I'm honored to have that chance.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, yeah. Yeah, and how about one other thing I was wondering about is I know one thing if you can piece together for us, I know there's, you know, you in with the county government, and there's also the governor, and what if you want to do one thing and the governor wants to do something else? Who has authority over that, or who sets the limits, or can the governor override you, or how does that work?
Well, traditionally, these responses are managed at the state level, but occasionally mm-hmm. we've seen across the country, more than a few places, where local governments that have been more directly impacted have moved more quickly than the rest of the state, and that's what we did here in St. Louis County. We were impacted. We still are the largest jurisdiction in the state, almost 1 million people, and we certainly have a different demographic, different geography than the rest of the state. We have well over a third, almost half of all of the coronavirus cases in the state. And we certainly had a different situation, and we had to move quickly, and we've benefited from that quick movement. But the governor's orders will impact the entire state. He's made it very clear that he'll leave it to local jurisdictions who are impacted directly to make their own decisions. And when his stay-at-home order is relaxed in a week or so, we anticipate that we'll be continuing here in St. Louis County for a little longer until we believe it's safe to ease those safety orders and, manage the virus and also begin to try and open up our economy more than it has been.
Yeah, and to try to rebuild from there. Yeah. And I guess a lot of the efforts from the county are on the county website. Let me give a quick shout out for that. It's stlcorona.com. So that's STL, and it's spelled the same way as the beer or the virus, stlcorona.com. And there's a ton of good, I looked at that website. You guys have a ton of good information on there.
Well, yeah, so this is where we can learn about testing, frequently asked questions. All of my executive orders and limitations are there, our public health orders. And also we can track our spending. There's a very nice portal there where in real time you can see what we spent on our three buckets of response, the public health response, the humanitarian response, and the economic response. I've also issued an executive order for an economic rescue team, and we're going to be talking more about that as we have conversations about easing our safety orders and social distancing, positioning the county very aggressively to put our businesses back to where they were before.
Yeah. Oh, an economic rescue team. That's excellent. So yeah. Yeah. And I guess the web, one thing you mentioned is the website has a detailed listing of the expenditures from the county. So the county has good transparency. Everybody can see where the money's being spent.
Yeah, I think that's important, and that's in real time. We want to make sure that everybody understands where the tax dollars are going and how we're spending the federal stimulus grant in a way that impacts the county and helps, most importantly, to address the public health response, but also to address humanitarian relief and moving us forward in getting our economy recovered and restored.
Right. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, and I think another thing I wanted to ask about is whether or not county partisanship is much of an issue in running the county. And I guess the way I wanted to ask that is, you know, one thing you might have noticed is that, you know, elected officials have, either a D or an R by their name, you know, and depending on which letter you have, there are going to be people who think you have the wrong letter. And if they think you have the wrong letter, then everything you do is wrong. Everything you say is bad. You know, is that kind of partisan craziness an issue when running the county, or is it less of an issue in the county than we see on the national stage?
Well, certainly at the national level, it's been tragic over the past, really over the past decade to watch, and over the past few years. And probably that partisanship probably played a role in our delayed response to this initially. But we did see our federal elected officials come together for this bipartisan stimulus package. And that was really because, of course, this is like our 9/11 in our country, the impact of this virus. At the local level, as when I was chair of the county council for a couple of years, I led a bipartisan coalition, and we were united together to solve problems for the county. And, of course, working very, very hard to protect the county. The former county executive was involved in a lot of issues that eventually led to his indictment and a jail sentence and a guilty plea. Mm-hmm. But moving forward, we've had a pretty good relationship. But here we are a few months from an election, and those partisan reflexes will be there. And we've seen a little bit of that where election around the corner and people start to gear up a little bit and taking shots at folks that have a different letter by their name. And then there are, you know, folks that, you know, feel very strongly about their party label, and even not elected officials, and they engage in this as well. But I think we'll get past that. You know, we have we still have those relationships. We still have those roots in working together, the county council and the county executive. And we will continue to govern regardless, continue to take care of the county. But we hope that Republicans and Democrats can come together and help us through this very tragic time in our history.
Oh, I sure hope so, because that would be a beautiful thing. But I'm glad to hear. Glad to hear it sounds like that's at least less of an issue on the local level than it is nationally. So that sounds good. So yeah. And I hear that music going in. Is that the music in the background there?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay. Chad is playing music in the background, and we all know what that means. The show is not done. The show's not over. We have a little bit more left to go. I'm here with Dr. Sam Page, county executive, been talking about COVID-19. When we come back, we're going to tell you a little bit about the fascinating history of hand washing. I know it does not sound fascinating, but I swear, trust me on this, the history of hand washing in medicine. We're going to talk about the story behind that, and we'll be right back. 97.1 FM Talk.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. We're back. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. We have our super special guest, Dr. Sam Page, County Executive of St. Louis County. And for this last part here, we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about the overlapping topic of hand washing, specifically hand washing in medicine. So this is going to be our moment of science. Chad?
And now for a moment of science.
Science.
A moment of science. I believe, brothers and sisters, we're talking about science here. So we're going to start this story with someone you might not have heard of. Fascinating story. It's Dr. Semmelweis. Dr. Semmelweis was a Hungarian physician in the mid-1800s. This was, roughly 1850, give or take. And Dr. Semmelweis worked in a hospital where he and other physicians, they delivered a lot of babies. And back then, it was very, very common for women who had delivered a baby to get sick, get a fever, and sometimes die. And at that time, the hospital he worked in, the death rate from getting a fever and then dying was about 6%. And that was sort of normal back then. That was common. And somehow, and this was before people understood what germs were. People didn't know that germs caused disease, really. And Dr. Semmelweis got the idea that maybe by washing your hands before you deliver the baby, that somehow that might help. So he started washing his hands. He was in charge, so he made the other doctors wash their hands also. And after doing that, the death rate went from about 6% to something way less than 1%. So it was a huge decrease in the number of deaths. And that part of the story, that should be the part of the story where we have a happy ending. But was it a happy ending? No, it was actually not a happy ending. That the story kind of gets sadder from there. So what happened is that other physicians around the world did not believe Dr. Semmelweis. They did not see any reason why washing your hands would make a difference. You know, why would you need clean hands to deliver a baby? To them, that made no sense. It was illogical. They thought he was a crackpot. He pushed his idea of hand washing year after year. It was sort of him against the world. Mostly other people did not believe him. And after he was at this for several years, he started having a mental breakdown. And they think it might have, you know, back then, sometimes people got syphilis infections in their brains or something like that. So they think it was probably some kind of brain illness he had. But he started acting very, very different. And Dr. Semmelweis was committed to an insane asylum in Hungary. And while he was at the insane asylum, he got into a fight with the guards. He lost the fight, and he died just a couple of weeks after he was admitted to the insane asylum. So he never lived to see the day when he was proven to be right, when it turned out that he was right about hand washing. And it was maybe 10 or 15 years later when the world woke up and realized that germs were a thing and washing your hands made a huge difference before any kind of medical procedure. So that is the story of Dr. Semmelweis. It's not exactly bedtime story for the kids, but that is the story, and that's kind of how science works out sometimes. And since we're talking about hand washing, you know, you've all seen it on TV, right? You know, the doctors are going to operate, and they're there at that sink, and they've got the cap and the gloves, and they're washing their hands. And it's actually a little more complicated and involved than it looks. So, you know, it's been a long time since I was in medical school, so it's been a long time since I've done that. We got Dr. Page right here. Dr. Page, you've probably scrubbed into like a bazillion surgeries there, Dr. Page? Sam? Yeah.
Quite a few since medical school and residency and young physician. We've certainly seen a lot of surgeries over time.
I'll bet.
I can't ever remember arguing with anybody about the importance of hand washing. That was well before my time.
Right. Yes.
Certainly, in an operating room, you have a sterile door, and that's where you come in from the equipment and the hand washing side, and then another side where you bring the patient in. But we always have had a three minute hand washing session, and once your hands are washed, then you hold them up in the air just like TV, and back through the door and put on a sterile gown and gloves and you go to work. But even when you're not in the, operating on a patient, we still, when we walk into the hospital every day, we do a 3-minute scrub, and wash our hands every time we go in and out of a patient's room, either soap and water or, alcohol-based hand sanitizer. It's just part of the routine, every day and many, many times a day, dozens of times a day in the hospital.
Right. Yeah. And I guess in the operating room, at least what I remember, is there's pedals on the floor to get the water to go, so you're not touching the handles, right?
All right. So we started out with pedals, a pedal for the soap dispenser, a little panel that you can hit with your knee to turn on the water, and it's on a timer for 3 minutes, and that's when you know the 3 minutes is up, when the water stops running. You know, you don't have to sing happy birthday or anything like that. the timer goes, and when the water goes off, it's been 3 minutes. There's some electronic sensors now, the more advanced techniques, but there's always been a timer to be very disciplined about how much time you spend washing your hands.
Right. Yeah. And I know when I did it, they had those scrubby brushes with the plastic bristles. Do they still have those, or is that a thing anymore?
Oh, sure. Those scrubby brushes are still around. Some of the hand sanitizers we have now are more advanced. The soaps are a little bit more advanced than they used to be. They all have a little chlorhexidine in them along with soap, and that's better. And now in the hospitals, you're required to keep your fingernails short, so there's less concerns about that than there used to be. But there's a lot of advances over the years, for sure.
I didn't even realize that. So there's actually been advances in hand washing technology. That's good to know.
Technology, soaps, and expectations. Absolutely no jewelry in the operating room. Can't have your nails done. They need to be clipped short. It's a different world than it used to be.
Right. Yeah. And that's a good thing. And I guess everybody else is washing their hands too, with not with the high tech hand washing, but I think the whole world is kind of learning the importance of washing hands in this pandemic era here. And
I think
we got a new normal going on.
Right. Our response to this in the community is to do everything we can as individuals to prevent the spread of this virus. And we know hand washing is really the key, soap and water and hand sanitizers. And that's what's helped us turn this tide. And it's a big part of what individuals do to get our community better.
Yeah. So that's our new normal. Hey, real quick before we go. So, Sam, when the pandemic is over and you can get out again, what are you looking forward to doing? What do you want to do?
Well, time with our friends. It isn't a Zoom call. Cardinals game, get a haircut, go out to eat. We miss those, and we miss the life like it used to be. It'll never be exactly like it used to be because we'll have this new normal of social distancing. But to see your friends again, that would in a social setting and not on video, would be my first goal.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. How about you, Chad? What do you want to do?
Using my voucher for Limp Brewery.
Oh, that sounds good. Using your voucher for Limp Brewery. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
There's this Mexican food place I want to go to. I want to do that. So anyway, okay. But I digress. Chad's playing the music. That means we gotta head out. Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Sam Page, County Executive. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, it sure was. Yeah. All right. Hey, we'll be back next week, and have a great week, everybody. Stay safe.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. We have our super special guest, Dr. Sam Page, County Executive of St. Louis County. And for this last part here, we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about the overlapping topic of hand washing, specifically hand washing in medicine. So this is going to be our moment of science. Chad?
And now for a moment of science.
Science.
A moment of science. I believe, brothers and sisters, we're talking about science here. So we're going to start this story with someone you might not have heard of. Fascinating story. It's Dr. Semmelweis. Dr. Semmelweis was a Hungarian physician in the mid-1800s. This was, roughly 1850, give or take. And Dr. Semmelweis worked in a hospital where he and other physicians, they delivered a lot of babies. And back then, it was very, very common for women who had delivered a baby to get sick, get a fever, and sometimes die. And at that time, the hospital he worked in, the death rate from getting a fever and then dying was about 6%. And that was sort of normal back then. That was common. And somehow, and this was before people understood what germs were. People didn't know that germs caused disease, really. And Dr. Semmelweis got the idea that maybe by washing your hands before you deliver the baby, that somehow that might help. So he started washing his hands. He was in charge, so he made the other doctors wash their hands also. And after doing that, the death rate went from about 6% to something way less than 1%. So it was a huge decrease in the number of deaths. And that part of the story, that should be the part of the story where we have a happy ending. But was it a happy ending? No, it was actually not a happy ending. That the story kind of gets sadder from there. So what happened is that other physicians around the world did not believe Dr. Semmelweis. They did not see any reason why washing your hands would make a difference. You know, why would you need clean hands to deliver a baby? To them, that made no sense. It was illogical. They thought he was a crackpot. He pushed his idea of hand washing year after year. It was sort of him against the world. Mostly other people did not believe him. And after he was at this for several years, he started having a mental breakdown. And they think it might have, you know, back then, sometimes people got syphilis infections in their brains or something like that. So they think it was probably some kind of brain illness he had, but he started acting very, very different. And Dr. Semmelweis was committed to an insane asylum in Hungary. And while he was at the insane asylum, he got into a fight with the guards. He lost the fight, and he died just a couple of weeks after he was admitted to the insane asylum. So he never lived to see the day when he was proven to be right, when it turned out that he was right about hand washing. And it was maybe 10 or 15 years later when the world woke up and realized that germs were a thing and washing your hands made a huge difference before any kind of medical procedure. So that is the story of Dr. Semmelweis. It's not exactly bedtime story for the kids, but that is the story, and that's kind of how science works out sometimes. And since we're talking about hand washing, you know, you've all seen it on TV, right? You know, the doctors are going to operate, and they're there at that sink, and they've got the cap and the gloves, and they're washing their hands. And it's actually a little more complicated and involved than it looks. So, you know, it's been a long time since I was in medical school, so it's been a long time since I've done that. But we got Dr. Page right here. Dr. Page, you've probably scrubbed into like a bazillion surgeries there, Dr. Page? Sam? Yeah.
Quite a few since medical school and residency and young physician. We've certainly seen a lot of surgeries over time.
I'll bet.
I can't ever remember arguing with anybody about the importance of hand washing. That was well before my time.
Right. Yes.
Certainly, in an operating room, you have a sterile door that's where you come in from the equipment and the hand washing side, and then another side where you bring the patient in. But we always have had a three minute hand washing session. And once your hands are washed, then you hold them up in the air just like TV and back through the door and put on a gown, a sterile gown and gloves, and you go to work. But even when you're not in the, operating on a patient, we still, when we walk into the hospital every day, we do a 3-minute scrub and wash our hands every time we go in and out of a patient's room, either soap and water or alcohol-based hand sanitizer. It's just part of the routine every day and many, many times a day, dozens of times a day in the hospital.
Right. Yeah. And I guess in the operating room, at least what I remember, is there's pedals on the floor to get the water to go, so you're not touching the handles, right?
All right. So we started out with pedals, a pedal for the soap dispenser, a little panel that you can hit with your knee to turn on the water, and it's on a timer for 3 minutes, and that's when you know the 3 minutes is up. When the water stops running, you know you don't have to sing happy birthday or anything like that. The timer goes, and when the water goes off, it's been 3 minutes. There's some electronic sensors now, the more advanced techniques, but there's always been a timer to be very disciplined about how much time you spend washing your hands.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And I know when I did that, they had those scrubby brushes with the plastic bristles. Do they still have those, or is that a thing anymore?
Oh, sure. Those scrubby brushes are still around. Some of the hand sanitizers we have now are more more advanced. The soaps are a little bit more advanced than they used to be. They all have a little chlorhexidine in them along with soap, and that's better. And now in the hospitals, you're required to keep your fingernails short, so there's less concerns about that than there used to be. But there's a lot of advances over the years, for sure.
I didn't even realize that. So there's actually been advances in hand washing technology. That's good to know. That's good to know.
Technology, soaps, and expectations. Absolutely no jewelry in the operating room. Can't have your nails done. They need to be clipped short. It's a different world than it used to be.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good thing. And I guess everybody else is washing their hands too, with not with the high tech hand washing, but with I think the whole world is kind of learning the importance of washing hands in this pandemic era here. And
I think we
got a new normal going on.
Right. Our response to this in the community is to do everything we can as individuals to prevent the spread of this virus. And we know hand washing is really the key, soap and water and hand sanitizers. And that's what's helped us turn this tide. And it's a big part of what individuals do to get our community better.
Yeah, yeah. So that's our new normal. Hey, real quick before we go. So, Sam, when the pandemic is over and you can get out again, what are you looking forward to doing? What do you want to do?
Well, time with our friends. It isn't a Zoom call. Cardinals game, get a haircut, go out to eat. We miss those, and we miss the life like it used to be. It'll never be exactly like it used to be because we'll have this new normal of social distancing. But to see your friends again, that would in a social setting and not on video, would be my first goal.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, yeah. How about you, Chad? What do you want to do?
Using my voucher for Limp Brewery.
Oh, that sounds good. Using your voucher for Limp Brewery. That's a good answer. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's this Mexican food place I want to go to. I want to do that. So anyway, okay. But I digress. Chad's playing the music. That means we gotta head out. Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Sam Page, County Executive. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, it sure was. It sure was. Yeah. All right. Hey, we'll be back next week, and have a great week, everybody. Stay safe.